Hello and welcome to the Inner Gamer episode 164.
Oh, we're two away.
We are your weekly dose of video game news, reviews, opinions, you're discussions, dead. And frustrations with Devin, made for by our listeners. My name is Brady Nusky.
Yeah, I'm Austin Morales.
I'm Devin DeRee. Today on the Inner Gamer, we played some games, Far Cry 5 and a mobile game, Florence. Moving into our gaming news. Couple of interesting things. No Man's Sky is adding content to the Xbox One, and with their next bit of stuff for the summer, whatever the hell that means. I'm still not playing it, is the short answer. Sea of Thieves has their first player to reach Legendary, and then our discussion topic, really good stuff. What makes an experimental indie game succeed? We talk about a very popular game. I say a very popular game, but popular to us, Where the Water Tastes Like Wine, and basically a lot of the indie industry. So with that, Brett, please cue the music.
Welcome to the Inner Gamer.
It is April 3rd, 2018. Welcome to the Inner Gamer podcast.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah. Do you enjoy this podcast? Oh. Devin, do you like this podcast?
I do. I like it.
Austin,
kinda.
Austin, do you
it's
like
okay.
this podcast?
For the most
could
part.
Be better.
Okay. Well,
there's some people I like.
Yeah.
Okay.
Some people I don't like.
Well, if you want to make it better,
you listen to their early shit. Podcast, just awful.
You can make it better.
You really got to wait till you get to season two of the.
Yes. Yes.
Wonder what changed.
It's really where the character development picks up.
Well, if you at home or driving or sitting at work are listening to this and you're like, I really like the Inner Gamer podcast.
Yeah.
Like, specifically that guy, Brett, like he's really cool. Or maybe you like Devin, maybe you like Austin. There's for you to donate to our Patreon.
I wish there was a way that I could help these guys out in some monetary way.
For as little as $12 a year, you can make
$12
and we'll give you some goodies along the way. $12 a year.
That's
basically
one trip to Shake Shack that you would have to forego in a year.
I mean, I have $12 on my couch right now. I'll just pull
Shake
it out.
Shack is really good.
Shake Shack is delicious.
Yeah. So save that Shake Shack. Send it
Save
to
it.
Us. We'll go to Shake Shack.
Yeah, we'll go. We'll take that $12 and go to Shake Shack.
But for $12, you can get literally access to our Discord channel to come and chat with us, play video games.
Premium
so that's really cool.
Oh, man.
And then the next tier up, you get early access to videos. Like, that's pretty badass.
That's fun.
The next tier up, you get a free video game maybe every quarter. Thing, yeah.
Every
it's a drawing. It's a giveaway.
You get entered into a drawing every 3 months for a free video game. What's not to love about that?
Yeah, that's great. So
there's not a whole lot of people in there, so it's a really small pool of people to draw from. So
really
look at
is.
That. You have great
like
chances at winning
right
a
now.
Fucking game.
Yeah. So basically, in a year, you are guaranteed to win a video game.
Oh man,
kind.
Yeah.
No, I guess
there's a 3 month minimum on that.
Yeah, yeah.
On that caveat, 3 month minimum.
Yeah, you have to give us. Funding for three months or 3 years.
Buttholes.
We prefer 3 years. Anyway, so let's talk about some video games.
Yes, video games. I didn't play any. Next.
So, yes. So everybody, we're going to take a moment. It's a little story time. We're going to travel to a place called Hope County, Montana. And we're going to venture out there with the beautiful mountains.
Green
pastures. The green pastures.
Lovely
the wonderful
river
wandering through. The deer in the distance. And then some psychotic cult leaders that started a religious
cult. There's multiple cult leaders?
Yeah,
there's
multiple.
So many cult leaders.
I guess there is four technically.
I guess, there's four, but then there's not. Anyway, we're talking about Far Cry 5.
Oh, man.
So,
all right, we've been talking about this shit for a while.
Yes.
So, you know, are we there? Did we live up to the hype at all? Did we make it?
I got a starting point for us.
Okay.
So if you listen to this podcast at all, you probably heard us talk about Far Cry 5 and how much we hate it. Went to E3 last year. I got to try the demo. Nothing special. It was like a quick like, hey, you're this dude and go to this little, you know, town area and kill all these guys. And
question,
it was like,
on that. So they just started you in the middle of somewhere and we're just like, here's a mission. Just do it. Okay.
They're like, here's how you play. All right. Now go kill all these people. All right. Have fun. And I did it. I did it twice because there's a time limit on how long I can play.
Oh,
and I was
God.
Like, this is stupid. No context. The only thing I know is that these are crazy people, you know, with guns, religious people with guns. And I was like, this is not going to be fun at all. At all. And forgot what happened. How did I get this game, Brett?
I told you to buy it because I want to do co-op.
That's right.
I was like, we need to play co-op on this game really badly. I want to buy it. You should buy it. Let's play co-op and do the story together, which we found out after the fact that we can't do the story together the way we want to.
Yeah,
because I can join your story and play through the whole entire game, but I can't, like, doesn't count for my progression.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a bummer.
So you have to play it twice.
It is a bummer.
Anyway, so reviews are actually really good for this game, and I could not believe it. Like, I was like, really? This game? I bought it. Brett bought it. I've played about 10 hours of this game, Brett.
About two and a half.
Two. Okay.
Not a lot yet, but
do you want to go over your experiences first before I blow my brains out with this?
Sure, sure. Cool. So I actually bought the season pass because I'm a crazy person.
Wow.
And
we've been like giving this game so much shit. You know, I really don't know if Ubisoft's gonna live up to it. Let's see how it's
I'll buy
the season pass. What is it? An extra $30? Okay, that's good.
Yeah. It was an extra $30. And
God, Brett!
But no, here's the deal though. The reason why I did it is because I was super excited about the DLC. Like, that sounds so cool. I want to fight freaking aliens. I want to do the Vietnam stuff. Like, that sounded awesome. The Far Cry 5 experience, not so much, but the game, the DLC is what I was buying. That sounds so cool. Anyway,
that sounds very chump-esque.
It sounds like the Order 1886. Anyway,
I will fucking end you.
I think that's too far back now. Too far back.
Anyway, so I did that, and so 2.5 hours or whatever, I jumped into it. I'm actually pleasantly surprised by this. It's not okay. So here's kind of the way I look at this game. It is an Ubisoft game. We talked a couple weeks ago about the story of Ubisoft and how they never really sell a story very well. And I had this topic of this religious cult leader and stuff like that. Like, this is a very serious thing to approach. Very, very serious. And the way that they introduced it, it's good. But it's not in any means a spectacular presentation of it. Like, I feel like this is what a Ubisoft like AAA title would do with a story like this. Like, I wasn't like, oh my gosh, this is so gripping. Holy shit, that just happened. I was just like, okay, this is what I expect. So that was kind of,
I expected this.
I'll speak on that for a little bit. So, as I've discussed in the past, there's this suspension of disbelief, which is key to video games or any story that you get into. And so usually for me, when you have a realistic or a story set in, you know, present time America, it's much harder for me to get sucked into it than getting into like a medieval or a fantasy medieval game, because there's that suspension of disbelief where you can just believe it.
Okay.
Because it is what it is.
That time didn't exist in your life.
And it's fantasy, and you could just be like, yeah, this is how I want life to be, you know? They actually did a really good job of pulling me into this game and making it set in stone, making me want to play this world. Like, I think the setup is great. Like traditional video games, you're the rookie. Oh, hey, rookie, come and help us do this like crazy shit or whatever. So you're thrusting into this this town to arrest the main cult leader, which I forget his name.
Yeah, Joseph Seed.
That's right,
Joseph Seed.
Yeah.
What an absolutely not at all blatant use of subtext for a name.
Yep. Yep.
Let me make sure, because there's Joseph.
You're right.
Well, because there's another J. His brother, his name's something. Yeah. So Joseph Seed is the father. There's Faith, and then there's what's his brother's name? Keep talking, and I'll find
out. Anyway, so you go into this. This town to arrest this guy who you have a U.S. Marshal there to arrest him for crimes, which I forgot what he said, but obviously he's a crazy cult leader with guns and he's killed people. So
Jacob and John, that's the other two brothers' names. So they're all J's.
Yeah, exactly. So obviously the rookie, you take this guy, and then everything goes to shit when you take off in your helicopter, because all the cult followers jump onto the helicopter. And
almost like zombies in a way, which is kind of weird.
They are.
But yeah,
I think that adds to it. You know, I don't know. It makes the game fun that they're zombies, zombie-like people. Anyway, you crash. Before you know it, you're
fleeing.
There's this resistance guy or like group who's in Hope County that's trying to liberate them, and you become part of that, and you help liberate all of Hope County.
They kind of put you in the position, but I felt like it was weird the way that they introduced that, because they're kind of putting you as if like you meet Dutch, who is this guy. He's a prepper dude that's got a bunker set up in Hope County, Montana, and he comes out, he finds you, brings you back, helps, gives you some clothes or whatever. And he's like, hey, there's a bunch of people that, you know, might be willing, if you do these things, might be willing to join up in the resistance. So they kind of put you as like, you are starting the resistance as the leader of the resistance, which I find it's kind of weird. It's like, why haven't these guys been doing this before? And, but there are pieces of them having been doing that, but like you are the guy that you're all of a sudden as this rookie here. Now you are tasked with starting the resistance. And they were like, here's the four things you can do to start your resistance. So you can destroy the shrines that the Eden's Gate people have set up. You can attack the outposts of Eden's Gate. You can save people from almost being killed or being converted into their religion or whatever, liberate them. And then there was a third thing. What was the third thing? There's like four tasks that you're supposed to do. I forgot what the other one is, but another thing. And then, so that's how you like
some other get third
resistance
thing
points to like eventually get people in this territory on your side. And
so I think the way that they, it's like that is because you're part of the police force.
Yeah.
And when you go in, obviously the police force is very small in this Hope County town, which it would be because it's a small town, right?
Yeah.
So like essentially you and four other people who are part of the police force and, or it was three plus the U.S. Marshal that's there, and your helicopter goes down. So there goes the police force and the last one there. So basically you are the police force. So you got to help, you know, liberate Hope County because you're the only authority essentially there.
Yeah, I don't buy that.
I am the law.
I mean, I understand what you're saying, but like,
I buy it.
I think it's
actually a good premise.
It doesn't sell me very much.
I mean,
on
it's
that.
Typical video
it's
game
just,
premise.
It's just silly. It's a silly concept. Like, but here's how you're one versus all, you know, kind of deal.
It's always like that.
Yeah. Well, that's what I don't like. That's what I'm saying is that it's annoying that that's like the trope.
And so, it's traditional Far Cry fashion anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what has held
that
me.
That sounds very recycled.
Yeah.
Very recycled.
And that's why I've never liked Far Cry, is for that reason. Like, I don't like being this sole guy that is pitted against everybody in this world. But that brings me to my reasons why I think I'm going to continue playing this game and like
because that reason
get into it. No, it's not because. It's because they allow you to you can actually get people. Like, the Guns for Hire system in there, I think, is a cool feature that actually makes it more interesting, because like I ran into my first dude, I saved him, I liberated him from being killed by these cult leaders, and I was like, hey, you want to join me and help me fight? And then he could go in and help me fight. And the system's very simple the way they handle that. It's just like, you know, if you're playing on mouse and keyboard, you press G to tell him like attack this guy or hold here or follow me or whatever. It's a very simple mechanic, and you can have, I think, two people as
your
followers.
Yeah, you get the two followers.
I like that. And they can also be animals too, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
So like,
so far I have a mountain lion. I've had a mountain lion and now I have a dog.
Yeah.
As
yeah.
my two, I can switch out.
So
I assume there's more animal.
To me, that makes it, I think you have a bear too.
Ah, yeah. There it is.
Bear, you have a bear?
Yeah. You have a bear.
You got a big
which
old
I was
bear.
Driving down the road. And then all of a sudden this freaking bear came out from the side and like ran into my car and like spun me out. I was like, holy
what
fuck.
A dick bear. That bear better cool have moment. Insurance.
Yeah. Right. It was a cool moment, but so premise aside, I think this is a good game. Like, I really like what I've played so far. I like the gunplay. It's pretty solid. The crafting system, they have a crafting system in there where you can collect
another
materials.
Typical Far Cry thing.
Yeah, but it's simple. Like, I feel like this is much more simplistic than previous games, maybe.
Yeah, the other ones, you'd have to like go to these areas, kill these a certain amount of beasts and get this stuff. And then you can make, you know, like a bigger bag or hold more money or hold more ammo, whatever. But now, like, it seems like you can just get upgrades at this point. Well, actually, those are most of that. Like, I can hold, like, instead of having like a bigger holster to carry more guns, now it's just a perk in their role playing system.
So, what kind of like crafting is there to be done, though? Like, what
it's
kind
like
of
crafting weapons and stuff like that? So, like explosives, bombs, dynamite, grenades. You're crafting.
So they have this
throwing knives. I think
they have drugs too, so you can pick up some herbs on the way, and it either increases your speed, increases your strength, or
so you're taking speed to become faster. Okay, all right. So really hitting that narchotics.
Oh yeah, just like any Far Cry game, and
just like any Far Cry game, just get doped up and kill everybody.
Yeah. So
how about that stealth though?
Yeah, this stuff sucks. That's pretty shitty. Yeah, I mean, I've never. I mean, has there been stealth elements that have been like strong at all in Far Cry in the past? Like,
not that I remember.
Stealth isn't even strong in Assassin's Creed.
That's true. Splinter Cell. Is
why
strong.
Why be stealthy? We can just run on rooftops and throw knives at people and all
they
that.
Did,
shit.
They did give a Splinter Cell. That was good. So that had some.
That was
stealth
only
aspects.
Good stealth.
Yeah, they kind of got rid of that as well.
Not very good. I feel like in this one, like I run into an area, I'm stealthy to kill one guy, and I'll like take him down with like a pipe or whatever. And after that, it's just like,
yeah. And I also hear like one guy sounds. And like, apparently everybody knows immediately where that silenced pistol shot came from. That bush over there, everyone focus fire.
Yeah. I just make sure I get in the right position to take out.
Shoot all bullets and grenades and that general fuck this area.
Yeah. So when I first started this game, I was really thrown off because I was like, damn, this is a small world, because when you first begin, you're like on this island and then you have to liberate that island before you open up to the rest of the world. And then I started zooming up around the other parts and I was like, damn, this is a small world here. There's not much to do. And all of a sudden I liberated Dutch's island and then the fog of war opened up and I was like, fuck, this map is big.
Technically four parts. There's a small part in the middle, but then there's three areas where the children of Joseph Seed.
No, not his children. They're his siblings.
Oh, siblings. Sorry. Yeah. Siblings who control these three areas.
Yeah.
And they are fucking massive. It's just legitimately a gigantic game. I cannot believe how big this is. And I think it's bigger than all the other ones.
There's
right?
There's like 40 or 50 missions to complete in each region. And that's just that's like just standard stuff. That's not including the outposts, the shrines you got to find. There's a lot of content in this game. A lot of content.
I'm impressed.
Yeah. And, but it's easy to get around. Like there's cars everywhere. If you see like some, what do they call them? Peggies, right?
Yeah. The Peggies are the cultists.
The cultists, which I think is a stupid name, but
what Peggies?
Well, it's PEG stands for something. I forgot what it stands for, but they term them Peggies for like their nicknames.
Yeah.
That's
yeah. I know.
So like okay. I shot at one of the Peggy guys, I steal a semi and then I'm just driving around just like ramming these guys. I'm going down the road. That's great. Oh, and one feature I really like about this is when you're driving, you can press shift to put on auto drive and you can aim down your sights and start shooting at people as you're going down the road.
Yeah,
so
nice.
It'll just follow a waypoint path and auto drive for you. Basically like having a Tesla that doesn't explode. And then
that doesn't explode. Big caveat there.
Yeah. And then you can start shooting at guys as they're driving by, which is really cool. So I don't know. I mean, I'm excited about it. I don't like the story set up behind it is kind of what I expected with Ubisoft. Like I said, I'm not super invested in that, but I'm intrigued enough by the concept and I'm excited to see what kind of story. Like I'm really excited to see Faith's story. It's like, yeah, she's got all this drug shit going on. I don't know anything about that yet other than I see it at the shrines that like apparently
I can tell
like
you all about that right now.
Mentalize, yeah, it makes you
so mental. I've gone through the Faith whole section. So basically there's this flower that
question real quick.
Yeah.
It's just on the top of my head. So once you liberate a section, like you liberate her area, do you still see cult leaders as you're driving through that region or are they pretty much gone? Okay. Never mind.
I literally took a plane and went to a new section.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So the whole thing with Faith is that there's this flower that grows in that area that they call it bliss and it makes you like super happy. Basically it's like marijuana, but like crazy marijuana.
Oh,
so
it's like shrooms and marijuana.
They literally
had a baby.
So if you walk through the field of the flower, like you get all these sparkles and stuff and you like your eyes start to go into like almost 3D mode in a way and you get very like narrowed and like, you know, it sounds like, you know, it's supposed to be like, oh, I'm like, I'm bliss. This is really happy drug, right? They're actually putting it in the water as well. So if you jump into the river in that area, you get that whole same effect too. Now, nothing happens over time because I figured like, if I stayed in it too long, I would start going crazy or like some like weird shit would happen, but that doesn't happen. It's just like, I don't know. It's just an effect. But if you walk around, you'll see these zombie looking guys, which I forgot what they call them, but they have this cloud of that over them to show that they're like,
oh yeah, they were super, hard to kill.
Yeah. If you don't shoot them in the head multiple times, they will get back up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's
he got up like four times on me.
No,
it's like this son of a bitch.
It's not physics.
No, it's not. Not at all.
It's not physics.
But for game mechanic, I think it's interesting. If there were zombies, it makes sense. But for game mechanic, like, I'm just like, okay, cool. These guys are harder, and it makes it a little more intense, especially when you have other guys with guns shooting at you, and then these guys.
You got the flamethrower guy.
Literally,
it sounds like y'all. It's that kind of sounds like, do y'all remember the very first Uncharted, and you could shoot people in the head, and they would just kind of like grab their cheek and be like, "Oh, ow," and then just go back to shooting you. I don't know of a single fucking person who would take a shot to the face and be like, "Yeah, I'm gonna keep shooting that guy." I would be like, "No, I'm done. Lay down. I'm gonna cradle my face."
Yeah. Well, if it's anything like. Like some of the other street drugs where literally you can be tased by three tasers and not go down.
Yeah, angel dust.
You might be able to get shot a few times in the chest and still get back up for a little bit.
That's insane.
Yeah, exactly.
They're all on bath salts. Mm-hmm. Basically. The entire cult is on bath salts.
Basically.
So I picked her, and basically her whole mission is every so often when you get to a story point that you get to... You get in this trippy drug world, like traditional Far Cry fashion... And she talks to you, and she explains some stuff, and blah, blah, blah. And the story moves along, and then eventually, once, because there's meter, every time you complete something, like Liberate, you get these points that move you along farther in the story. So once you get to her icon at the very end of this meter, you go into a boss battle, basically, and fight her, which was trippy as well. But overall, like I found it pretty fun. That actually, the way they move the story along is pretty quickly, and I'm surprised. With that, but there's a lot to tell there, so there's a lot there, and there's plenty to do in this town. Like Brett said, there's just gobs of stuff to do, and I think that cycle, that 30 seconds of fun, is pretty constant. So if you like Far Cry, I think you're really gonna like this game.
I have to add one more thing real quick, otherwise then we'll have to like do a round two next week about this. But so they also have the art. That's just part of the game. Then there's this arcade section where you can go up to like these machines and go in these arcades. And inside that's like a whole multiplayer like component where people can build maps for it and generate like their own content. And you can fight multiplayer levels or single player levels in this arcade mode. So that's a whole other part that we haven't delved into yet.
And they really want you to play this
really
arcade.
Deep in there. Yeah.
Because like places you liberate and like main areas where you're supposed to go to, there's an arcade there every time.
Yeah.
I'm just like, dang.
And there's like live events that they're going to be doing in this game, which I haven't figured, they haven't started them yet. They start on April 3rd. So the day you listen to this podcast is when the live events start. That's a whole nother component too. So there's a lot in here. But like for me, this Ubisoft actually kind of surprised me with this because there isn't anything in here that feels frustrating yet.
Very well polished. Like this is
I know there's microtransactions somewhere. I haven't seen them yet. I've seen them. It's the silver.
The silver.
Yeah. But so like I haven't had a desire to buy them.
Right. You can find silver throughout the world and cleaning stuff, but silver is like their in-game currency to get like the cool gun. Like you can get a machine gun that has the American flag.
Yeah.
You know, glossy
cool skins
texture
and stuff,
on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Like I'm intrigued. this is a very well polished Ubisoft game. I know we've been talking about how like shitty they've been, and I still agree with that. But this one is actually
no one can see it, but I'm rolling my eyes really hard.
It's actually fun. Yeah. I didn't want to get this game, and everyone knows if you've been listening to podcasts, I did not want to play this game at all.
Yeah.
But surprisingly, I'm having fun.
Yeah,
and I got to complete it before God of War comes out.
Hell yeah! So one more thing I want to talk about. This is a complete 180 about what we just talked about, but there's a little game I played a couple of weeks ago called Florence. It's a mobile game. It's an iOS game. It is made by, published by Annapurna Pictures, which they do movies and things like that, but they also work on video games. And Florence is a very simple, this is a game, it's $2.99 on the App Store. You can play it in 30 minutes. It's a 30-minute experience. But there's a few things right with this game. One, the art is very pretty. It's a kind of a sketched, like somebody sketched out drawings and then put color behind it. So it sketches on top of color. Very, very good looking. I'll show you guys a picture and I'll put it in the art of the graphic too. The music is wonderful. Absolutely wonderful music, really, really solid. And then there's some neat little gameplay mechanics on the phone that just make it cool. So this is a story about a Asian girl who falls in love with another guy or with a guy. And like the story of like this journey of basically falling in love and the roller coaster of ups and downs that you encounter through life.
And this isn't a game?
It's a game in 30 minutes. It's very simple. So like you start with, you see it and you interact with, like you see them for the first time. You're like, oh my gosh, this is the guy that I love in my life. And then you go on a first date and then you get to know each other better, and then you get married and you move in together, and then you start, you don't get married, you start moving in together, and then you have fights, and like all these things are happening. There's no words in this game at all. Nothing is spoken. There's no text anywhere. So like, for example, when you're on your first date, the way that you communicate is you're chatting with one another, and there's these little chat bubbles that pop up. And in order to respond with the chat, you have these puzzle pieces that you have to put together. Once you put them together, that sends a chat bubble. So they start out complicated, and the more the conversation goes on, the simpler the puzzle gets to put these pieces together to form the chat bubble. And that's like an interesting little gameplay mechanic to, you know, visualize a first date, you know, like a first date that's going well.
Because trying to talk with the opposite sex is like a puzzle.
It is like a puzzle. Yeah. And,
didn't even get all introspective there on everybody, but
there's a part where when you move in with a person, you're looking at a shelf and you are unboxing your stuff as you're moving in. And you know, when you move in with somebody, you have to decide what to keep and what to get rid of. So you're sitting there and you have X amount of spaces on the cabinet.
Yeah.
And you decide, well, I'm going to get rid of his stuff here, and I'm going to put my stuff here and take this stuff off there. But there's no right or wrong answer. You just do it. And then as time goes on, you experience different moments and you have a fight, and like the fight goes really fast and the pacing picks up a lot. And some of it's just like comic book story, scrolling through images and seeing animations slowly as they transition. There's a time lapse moment where you have to use your finger to like basically color in the detail to see the action, like to see what that frame is about. So a lot of simple little things. This is a 30-minute thing. It's just a really cool $3 thing that's, I would think everybody should just get, just to be like, damn, that was really neat. That was fun. And interesting and engaging. And like when we talk about story and stuff like that, this is an example of something that can tell a story without saying anything. And it was impressive.
I dig that.
That's very impressive. Yeah.
And it even touches on like, I mean, cause these are diverse characters. So it's a modern look at stuff. Like it's not like, I mean, it's a mixed race relationship. And so, and as well. So you have that they touch into and like this Asian woman who has a traditional Asian family, who's like, no, you need to get married or whatever. And the girl is fighting against that because she's modern day age. Well, she wants to move in before she gets married. And the mother's like, when are you going to find a husband? Like, you need to find out, like, you know, there's these traditional like societal tropes that come from different cultures that are expressed in here really well and really thoughtfully, that I think are very clever.
Does it feel genuine or does it feel kind of just tacked on?
No, it's very genuine. Yeah, it's very genuine. So
interesting.
I'd recommend it. $2.99. Very cool. No, like, that's not hard. I mean, it's just, you just do it. You can sit in bed one night before you go to bed and just play through this thing, be done, call it a day. But it's very cool. I'm glad it exists. Put it that way. So here's what the art looks like. So in this moment here, you're swiping up to see different things. And then this is her. So you're like coloring in the mirror on this. So like it was an empty mirror and you're coloring it in to see like who you were as a child when you were into art and stuff like that. That's the lover and stuff. And like what that looks like, this was something you had to color in. So like different little gameplay elements, but very pretty game, very great sound. I mean, the soundtrack's phenomenal. Just a neat, this game is a work of art, put it that way.
Well said.
So anyway, that
sounds fun though.
It. Yeah, check it out. Florence by
and the Machine.
And the Machine. Yeah. All right, that's gonna wrap it up for the games we played this week. Many more to come in the coming weeks, or things just a recap on, basically, because we don't have anything big coming out until God of War, so which we'll talk about later. Stay tuned for our video game news and we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
It is time for our video game news. In this segment, we share the best headlines from the week in the gaming industry. This week, we are going to start with some virtual reality conversation. PlayStation VR is about to get another price cut. It is, it might be the first price cut. Yeah. Anyway, first price cut. First. It is dropping $100. So as of now, the PlayStation VR PlayStation camera bundle, which is necessary, you have to have the camera to make the PlayStation VR work, will be $299, which is less, it used to be $400. So now you can get it for $300. That also means the PlayStation VR Doom bundle is $299 as well, while the Elder Scrolls bundle is $349 instead of $449. So
that's a lot of price drops.
Yeah. So Oculus has dropped in price. HTC Vive has dropped in price. And now this has dropped in price. So I still feel like the PlayStation VR bundle, I mean, at $300, it's more accessible.
Yes.
The Switch costs, but it's still not, because it's a peripheral, I feel like it probably needs to go to the $200 mark. And then, like, sales are going to go cray.
Cray.
Yeah. Like, would you buy it for $199 if it was $200?
Yes. Yes.
$300? Is that like a...
It's pushing it.
Pushing it? Yeah.
It's pushing it.
That's kind of how I feel. But that's good. I mean, it's good to see that we're seeing some reduction in prices on the PlayStation VR. So,
if you want, you know, a really cool headset, you can get the Vive Pro.
For what, $899 still?
$800, but it's just a headset.
Jesus fucking Christ.
You don't get any of the controllers or the base stations. I'm like, you gotta be kidding.
Wait, seriously?
Yeah, but they
I didn't realize it wasn't bundled. Damn.
No, yeah, it's not bundled, but it's upgraded.
Good God.
Upgraded graphics.
It looks nicer.
So.
Okay, yeah, great. Yeah, thank you for making VR look better. Where are the fucking games?
We're expanding to better horizons for even more money.
Well, what they don't tell you is packaging the deal is Half-Life 3.
Lies.
Lies.
Lies and fucking slander.
They would have sold all the consoles.
So earlier in the podcast, we talked about Far Cry 5 and the Far Cry Arcade. We didn't go in detail with that, but one of the things that comes with Far Cry 5 on the PC is a map editor, in that you can create your own maps. So in approximately 2 days' time, somebody used the Far Cry Arcade map making tools and made the Counter-Strike map DE Dust 2.
That's already. So, what the fuck?
Like, recreated it. So now you can jump into and play DE Dust 2.
Why?
In Far Cry 5.
It's okay.
I mean, I think it's awesome. I want to do it.
But like, who does this? Who just figures out they can do this shit?
Yeah, and the fact they do it so quickly and so well, that's the amazing part to me. It's like, these guys need to be hired by somebody and put it to good use somewhere. Like, I mean, that's good use that they're putting out to the community, but still, it's just, it's mind-blowing. So, that was kind of cool. No Man's Sky. You guys remember that game?
I remember not spending any money on that piece of garbage. And I remember both of you spending money on that piece of garbage.
I guess it was on PlayStation. Well, it's coming to Xbox One.
Great. Great. No one can play it there, too.
So I'm surprised. The reason why I put this story in here is because of the determination of this team, and that they're still supporting this game over 2 years after, almost 2 years after
release. We're
going
to beat this dead horse until we have just a big tub
apparently
of glue.
It's really good now. Like, I actually rebought it
I
haven't played it yet.
Okay. Oh, interesting that you tell me
it's
that.
Still in
okay.
Crap. But I did rebuy it for like $20, I think. So that was cool. But they have a new update coming out in the summertime called Next. And it's a free update. And they are saying that it is going to be something special.
It
is going to be the biggest update that they've ever had for all versions of the game. And it's coming out in the summertime. So I'm not sure what that entails, but since the game launched, like when the game launched, it was basically just like a resource gathering game that you could explore empty worlds. And now you can craft buildings and set up ecosystems.
Okay.
And you can actually see other people in the game more so than you could before, I think. And
do I sound sold yet?
Totally.
All these things. Tomorrow. So there's more stuff, and that's cool. So
here's my thing.
I want this to be good.
No, I can't take it anymore. Look.
Oh no.
This game was a fucking disaster from the get-go, right? And now they've done all this stuff. They've done all this stuff to fix it, make it a great experience. And now they've added this stuff too with the building construction. Oh man, what? Why not just make a new fucking game? Like, why not just put this to rest? Why not be like, you know what? This was a flop. This was a flop. We're so sorry. And rather than trying to like make up ground to try to make the game quote unquote good, or in this case, in my opinion, a playable game, not even a good game, but a playable game. Why not just be like, you know what? We're going to dump that. We're going to start on a new project. This is going to be our new thing. Why keep going back to the failed experiment?
I don't know. I think there's potential in this game because the foundation was solid. It was empty. And like the same argument can be made of Sea of Thieves right now, in that it's, there's more substance.
Well, and they're going to blow it up when they make Sea of Thieves Battleground.
Yeah. Yeah. So like there's something, there's a good foundation there. The systems are pretty solid. It's just, they need to make the worlds feel more. It's kind of like a good comparison of this is, in a way, is a Deep Rock Galactic, because Deep Rock Galactic is also procedurally generated, just like No Man's Sky is, but they found a way with these random encounters of like alien bugs coming after you to make it interesting so that it's not just a sterile environment that you're traveling through. And in No Man's Sky, they never had that system in place, and you also couldn't do anything with your friends, so that was really dumb. So they started adding more of these features into it. I think they could salvage this, because at its core there's good stuff there, just like the world itself and how vast it can be. Like, that's really exciting to me, but I want to travel to those worlds and explore those worlds. I don't want it to be like Mass Effect 1, where you drop in on all these worlds and they're empty, and that you land there and you're like, fuck, there's nothing here, let me go back up into space.
So you bought it twice. Are you gonna play it again soon?
Yeah,
tell us all about it.
Yeah, I will after I get through this other backlog of things that I have. So I'll come back to me in 5 years when they have five more updates for the game, and then I'll tell you how it is.
I mean, on Devin's point, so many games are out now. So many more games are coming out this year that are way better. If it would, same with Sea of Thieves, if it were released free to play with microtransactions,
free to play was key. Yeah,
I think both these games would have seen much more. People have been more inclined to play these now and continue with them if that was the route they went. But obviously, you get picked up by a big studio, you're going to be a $60 game, regardless, apparently, of whatever you have. And apparently, these companies don't give a fuck if it's not a complete game. They're just like, here, give us $60. Here's a thing.
Whatever. No, thank you. I'll pass.
All right. This next article is really exciting, actually.
I feel like this is in the same line, though. Like, this kind of thing of, like, taking a mediocre game and adding more mediocrity to it.
I think it's mediocre,
but it is. I mean, after
debatable.
A while, it is.
I think it's debatable.
Yeah. Yeah. So, same as No Man's Sky. That's debatable as well. It's exactly the way. Anyway, Pokemon Go is expanding. So, Pokemon Go, up to this point, has basically been, like, you attack town, which that was a good part. Like, having the gyms and stuff like that, all the gyms, that's really cool and exciting. Capturing the Pokemon is really good. Now, they're adding story elements to this game. So, you can, you're going to get research tasks that will allow you to add new activities and challenges that will give you in-game rewards. So, some of them will lead trainers to access storylines that include discovering the mystery behind the mythical Pokemon Mew.
So. I still know nothing about Pokemon. I know nothing.
Who are you?
I don't
gamer?
Know. Yeah, well.
We'll take that R off
of
that.
Don't gamergate me.
Gamergate you.
Butthole.
So they're going to have field research and special research. Field research will be collected by spinning nearby Pokestops, and they include a wide range of Pokemon-related activities. Special research tasks are story-driven activities that may be requested by Professor Willow, who you only saw for like a brief moment, like he doesn't exist in any other capacity. And then they unfold as a trainer completes more objectives. So it's more reason to kind of get people into the game and get excited and playing it more and give them more, I guess, what do you call it? Substance to their adventures, as opposed to just collecting numbers and seeing where things go.
By these pictures, I can tell you, I could be about this.
Yeah.
I could really be about this. This is something that they wish they had early on. I might still be playing this game.
Aren't you still playing it?
No. I jumped onto it to try out the new stuff, and it was fun. And I like want to do it, but I just have no time, and I'm not here in Fort Worth anymore. So
that's true.
I can't really successfully. I literally have to go out of my way to play this game now.
So basically, you have to do any work.
You really have to go to play Pokemon Go.
Yeah.
I see what you did there. See that?
Well, the Go, there's a lot entailed with that Go. Before it was just Go.
So anyway, that's Pokemon Go.
Pokemon Go.
Then we got the Hogwarts game coming out later this year, supposedly. That's Ooh. Also from them. So that's kind of exciting. Last story we have is actually a two-parter story. It's about Sea of Thieves. So there's a Sea of Thieves player that has been the first person to reach max rank. And what that means is that you have to reach level 50 with all the factions in the game. So there's three factions. You have the Gold Hoarders. You have the, I always forget the other people's names, the Merchant Alliance and the Order of Souls. And by completing all their factions, you reach level 50. What happens is you go to the mysterious stranger that was there at the beginning of the game that I remember you told me about and showed me. And that unlocks a new kind of like a little tavern that has more or less epic level quests and voyages, from my understanding. So when he gets down there, one, you got the bragging rights. You've now become legend and all that stuff. But in the Tavern of Legends, it's a grotto that has ghostly merchants and a tavern for players to explore. But it's where you can find the pirate lord and accept these legendary voyages that combine aspects of all mission types into mega grand adventures. But it's not sure what the rewards are yet. So we'll find out what that is, but this is basically the early entry into what is the end game of Sea of Thieves. And
more grindy.
Somebody's there. And I think it is more grindy.
You've now unlocked more grinding quests.
So that's interesting. But yeah, have you played it much since like a couple whenever we last played?
I've just been doing Far Cry.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's a new game out. It was fun, so I'd rather do it. Yeah. Travis and Sarah returned theirs to Microsoft.
They did?
Yep.
God damn it.
Yeah. I was going to do it too, but I figured I'd hold out to see what they bring so we can jump into it every so often. I mean, I think it's hard to say the core game because the core game is very, very thin, but just, you know, being a pirate on the seas is pretty fun. It's just, I wish they would do more. And it's going to suck if 2 years out, they're just like fucking No Man's Sky. Like, oh, we're still releasing it, making it better. It's like, oh, well, yeah. I'm not going to play this in a year, you know, unless they do something now, drastically now. I'll play this probably for another few more months to see what, you know, patches they bring out. But after that, I'm just going to be sitting in my, I'm probably going to delete it.
Do you think they have the potential to, man, that sucks. So I want to play this so bad with people, but everybody's leaving it already.
Oh, I know.
Everybody doesn't want to play it.
So disappointed.
Well, it's grindy.
Yeah. So is Destiny.
I mean, it's not even story there. It's like,
that's
really?
True. That's true.
It's fine if there's no story. Just make it fun. Like, if you could build your own, like, if it was like Rust.
Maybe even make your own pirate.
That would be nice. That'd be nice. Yeah.
I nodded at Devin.
It's kind of a bummer. I mean, it's a good game. It's a good foundation. No Man's Sky is a good foundation. This is a good foundation. Fortnite was a good foundation, but they added some good stuff to it. And I think Fortnite wouldn't have been successful had it not been made free to play for the Battle Royale component. So Sea of Thieves might benefit from going free to play. I don't know if they will. But on that note, Sea of Thieves is, this is a sad note, actually. Sea of Thieves is Microsoft's most successful new IP of this generation, meaning the Xbox One generation.
Oh man, wow.
So it has 2 million players and counting, and it says that it's beating out previous titles like Sunset Overdrive, Recore, and Quantum Break.
Come on, so man.
If you look at that lineup, it's like
those other games aren't even that great.
Exactly. That's the thing. I mean, like Quantum Break was cool, Recore was not that great. Sunset Overdrive was cool, but they never reached commercial success of any kind. And it's such a sad state, actually, because if you look at PlayStation's lineup of stuff, like look how good their first party titles are. Horizon Zero Dawn, freaking The Last of Us. We got Detroit Become Human coming out soon. We got Spider-Man, Uncharted, like all of these things. Ratchet and Clank was a badass game.
Oh, we like games?
Bloodborne.
Games to play?
Well, Bloodborne, was that first party? Was that only on PS4?
Yeah.
Yeah. So like, Damn. So, anyway, so I mean, they know that people are seeing this as being a kind of a low content based
success for Xbox, but for the industry, it doesn't hold any weight at all.
I now understand why they were so quiet about the progression system for so long in this game, because
there is none.
Yeah, there is. It's there, but it's very bland.
Well,
it's
kind of
like
level is.
It's kind of like the bounties. Like the thing you were saying, it's like the bounties of Destiny.
Yeah.
Where it's kind of like the achievements that come in games. This is like an achievement that you would play, which isn't the main part. But this is just like the achievement part. So it's like optional side quest caliber, not main content caliber.
Yeah.
So
I think we should do another final Sea of Thieves review thing.
Yeah, we can do that.
Just to be like, that's where it all went wrong.
I'd say we'll give it a couple months. I want to see where they take this game. I think we should do a discussion on that actually at some point.
I'd be down for that.
What a discussion topic, like a post-mortem kind of deal of like, here's after the fact. Or I think with several of these co-op games, like looking back on them, and we already had a co-op discussion. But anyway, that's if you guys want to hear something like that, want to hear us talk about a post-mortem of Sea of Thieves, let us know in the comments. You can hit us up on Facebook, everywhere. Go to the innergamer.net, send us a message there. Subscribe to us on Patreon, and you can reach us faster, and we'll respond to you in seconds. So
that's
there too.
Seconds.
So that's it. That's the news we have for this week. What do you guys think?
That's a real question.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's great. Yeah. No,
it's not much happening right now.
No, I know.
Really. It's kind of like the summer slog is kind of upon us right now.
It's weird because like we have all these games that have come out that we were really jazzed about, like Monster Hunter World. So exciting. It was exciting for like a month and a half. I feel like the conversation has dropped off and there's people that are still playing it and stuff, but like not near as much.
I mean, that's a grindy thing too. Once you get past some of the story, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just what it is. So
yeah,
it's fun for a little bit.
Sad day. Anyway, so that's going to be it for our news. If there's something we missed, we want to hear from you. Email us at hello@theinnergamer.net and we'll talk about it next week. Don't forget, if you like what you hear, please give us a review and rating on iTunes. We'll be back after the break with our discussion topic on experimental indie games and how they can succeed in this saturated market. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
Today we're going to talk about something very, it's not super like happy, it's kind of sad, but there's some happy moments too, and there's some lessons to be learned from this.
Yeah,
but today we're going to be talking about what kinds of things can make an experimental indie game succeed, or in general, what can indie games do from 2018 onward to succeed, because the current space of indie games has changed drastically in the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
The reason why this subject came up is that Janneman Nordhagen, a good contact of ours, just recently released his game Where the Water Tastes Like Wine. He was formerly the lead developer on Gone Home. That was the huge commercial success back in 2013 that just blew everybody away. And was like,
I think a whole year no one can stop talking about it.
Right. Yeah.
It was all about Gone Home and the impact of Gone Home. And man, what a completely transcendent game that completely broke the mold as far as video games
storytelling.
That basically created the walking simulator.
Yeah. Like,
that was.
Well, I mean, it kind of brought it back. It was already a thing, wasn't it?
No, this was the first. Well, I mean, Myst
really falls in, like, it's first person, it really falls into a puzzler, but you really miss, you don't walk around, you move from stagnant position to stagnant position.
Yeah, I think Gone Home was the first commercial successful walking simulator, and it made the term walking simulator a thing.
Yeah.
Before that, nobody said anything related to walking simulator, but now it's like that's a genre, essentially. So so Where the Water Tastes Like Wine came out, and Janneman posted a Medium post about his postmortem of the game.
Yeah.
And basically said that, in his words, Where the Water Tastes Like Wine was an extremely ambitious game, but at the end of the day, it was a quote commercial disaster. So,
oh, that hurts my soul.
It does hurt because like hurts. We've been that so excited so about bad. This game for so that long.
Yeah.
So, given the climate of everything, you've like indie games is such a big thing right now, right? Like,
yeah.
More than
yeah.
ever.
Yeah.
I feel like at this point, this would be successful.
Yeah.
You know?
You think? Yeah.
Look at all the indie games now that are successful. Celeste, out of nowhere, blew up.
Yeah.
Indie game. Huge success.
Wow. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit first about what he put in this article. So like give his perspective on it, and then we'll go into kind of our thoughts and explore that mindset with everything. So in the article, he wrote about the good and the bad things of the game. So to summarize in a nutshell, on the good side of things, he was very proud of the fact that he got a huge, diverse array of writers from different backgrounds, different histories, all these things that
yeah.
really put a lot of passion into writing the different elements of the game.
And a lot of those writers having different educational backgrounds as far as how they learned
yeah.
things
yeah.
about that industrialized American folklore
right.
Era.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, so for those that don't know, Where the Water Tastes Like Wine is an American folktale. And it's told, there's 16 different writers that wrote this game. Yeah. And it's told, it's basically trekking across the United States, I yeah. believe.
Yeah, kind of during the Depression era.
During the Depression era, yeah. It has a very unique art style. And that's another thing that he was really proud of is the art style. He had yeah. hired some artists that literally, it looks like, to me, it looks like an interactive comic book when you're looking at the art and everything. Very, very good looking art.
Like a much cleaner version of like early Telltale style
yeah.
visuals.
Yeah.
Very big color palette too. Oh.
Yeah. And then he had his music. He was very proud of his music. He hired a composer that worked on music like blues and jazz and folk music and all these different types of sounds that were built into this game. And then just the success that he got from like shows and trade shows and things like that. Cause he was at places like the Mix LA, which is, we met mm-hmm. him there. We saw him there. We saw him at South by Southwest.
Yep.
He's at a bunch of places, and like a lot of early writings were written about this game. And yep. like, this is super innovative and new.
Yeah.
And different.
I vividly recall my experience of getting to meet him, talk with him, see the insightful shit he was saying to me about all these incredible elements in his game, and then getting to play it,
yeah.
which was even more incredible. I sat there with that controller in my hand and my headphones on, and from the moment I heard that first bluegrass banjo strum, I was like, I'm in. Fuck, yeah. I'm sold. I want this game so damn bad.
Yeah. So
I thought it was going to be like an instant right. success.
Yeah. So that's kind of all the pros of this game. Now let's talk about in his mind, like what he wrote in this article were the cons. And if you go to medium.com, search for Where the Water Tastes Like Wine postmortem, you can find this article. But ultimately it comes down to a few things. One, I think the way he said it, he took on too ambitious of a project yeah. for a person that had not built his own game before.
Yeah.
So like he didn't understand anything regarding the business side of things. He didn't know much about, like he took on a game that he thought he could handle, but he wasn't an artist. Mm. He was a programmer.
Yep.
He wasn't a writer. So he learned all these things that were so heavy on like things that he didn't really have this like as much skills in as that. I mean, that he thought he could work on. And then he also had, he said that testing was something that they didn't spend enough time on. Like,
yeah,
they,
testing was a real big roadblock yeah. for him, you know, because you think, I mean, as he mentions, you want to play test your game from start to finish, and not just from start to finish, but every nook and cranny from yeah. start to finish. His game's 10 to 20 hours long, depending on what you do. And I mean, man.
Yeah.
For someone up against a time crunch like he was, budgetary issues, some other hurdles that were just
yeah.
really
4 years in development.
Getting accurate playtesting
these AAA titles are like 60 hours
long. Oh my gosh.
Play The Witcher from start to finish and get everything in there and tell us what's messed up.
And then play it four more times.
You have till tomorrow.
Yeah. No, it's crazy. And he said the big thing they focused on was like functional issues and stuff like that. So like, did this thing break or did this shut down or whatever?
Yeah. But
like,
did this cause the game to crash?
Yeah. What we didn't look as much into is pacing and, you know, repetitiveness and things that aren't bugs. They are just design concerns, you know? So there was that. And then the fact that he lost two of his artists, right? It was,
lost two artists like at the same time. Like, you want to talk about timing, especially when you're like doing something as daunting as making a video game, which is always against a time crunch and a budget constraint.
Right.
Holy shit. Like, two artists at like, you're kind of dead on arrival at that point from a number of other like video game industries. Like, if you can think of two main artists from like Destiny bouncing out at the same time, your game's done. You're done.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, yeah, I don't know what that, when you say artists, like, what are that entire, what that actually entails? Cause I mean, yeah, you could just find more artists, right? Because Bungie has a general, I'm thinking of like general, like, oh, just, you know, graphic designing the actual characters and models and stuff like that. This is literally art. Like, all of it is art.
It is, like actual painting shit on a wall style art.
You
can't replicate that from just finding another person to do that same kind of art style.
Yeah.
It's very unique.
Just finding artists in general that are like good, well, I mean, regardless of the type of art that they're making or the type of designs that they're working on, finding somebody that, one, is willing to work on your project, that they're excited about the project and it's not just a job for them. Because for this, like, he needs people that they are passionate about the project, not just doing it because they're paying him, you know?
Right. Exactly.
Like,
you
need somebody that's got like, that like is like, this is something that I'm really pumped about. So that cuts out half of your audience probably, because some guys out there just want to work for a paycheck, but those aren't the people that are going to put their passion and best work into the job. So that's a concern for sure. But the other thing he mentioned was 2018, the fact that it just released in 2018 or 2017. Was it 2018?
2017.
Okay. Yeah. So it just came out the wrong time. So that, which is true, because like when Gone Home finished, like that's when we talked about the beginning. When that finished, it was there wasn't any games out there, hardly at all. Like you had Bastion, you had Braid, probably you had Super Meat Boy, Fez, I believe, just came out roughly around that time. Like there was just a select few titles. You're like, these are indie games that are really cool.
Yeah,
and then all of a sudden, like, bam, it's just blown up from there. Unity became more accessible. It's like super easy to build in Unity now. Everybody learn how to build in Unity. So,
well, and you also happening. Think about from a topical standpoint, like games being released at a certain time are very topical, or not even topical, but just being in a certain trend era. You know, we've talked about it at times, how we felt like we were flooded with these third person shooters for a while. And then the industry kind of morphed and moved over to a bunch of, we're going to play a shitload of RPGs, like all these different RPGs that open world RPGs that you are just, it's daunting to look at all the different things you can play. And I don't necessarily know if 2017. Yeah, I can say that 2017, the time that this was released, we're talking about when indie games have now stepped away from being a really cool kind of niche following to now, like, you can stack indie right up next to AAA games. And
do it again, do your little person, this is indie games.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, I would say that, but I mean, I don't necessarily want to say that the market was flooded with different indie games, but maybe this was something that was slightly missed. And this kind of goes to one of my points about this, this game specifically. And I mean, nothing against Yonaman for, you know, the game that he made, because when I got to play it at South By, I was absolutely blown away. I just don't have a PC. To me, it was I feel like a big struggle here is accessibility. And I have, you guys know this, I haven't shut up about indie games I've been playing on my Switch. Do you know why? Because it's easy to get games on the Switch. I spend $20-25 at most and I get an amazing game. on my Switch that I can't shut up about for weeks at a time. And the Switch is what, $300 as opposed to a $1,000 to $2,000 machine, depending on how good you want it to be.
Yeah.
I kind of would have loved to have played this game, but I didn't have the PC. I didn't have access to it.
Yeah. And think about it, like, you know, back when that came out, when he started this game, like I'm sure the plan, and with a lot of these games that are coming out now that have been in development for 3-4 years, they're coming to PC because back when you started it, PC was the only market that would take that would easily allow you to publish in an indie game. You know, like, it wasn't until the last couple of years that PS4 and Xbox started doing a lot of push for getting new indie games on the market. And the Switch just came out last year. So nobody knew before 2 years ago that the Switch was even a thing that could support indie games. They didn't have that mindset in their head.
Right.
So for the fact like, he thought when he built this game that it was going to be a 2-year development cycle, instead it took him 4 years to develop.
Yeah.
4 years, a lot has happened. Like, think about that. Like, if you started college when he started this game, you would be out of college and have a degree.
Yeah, I finished college in 4 years.
Or if
shut up and move on.
Normal people. Just kidding.
Shut up and move on.
But so, like, that's another thing that I just thought about is that, you know, whenever Gone Home came out and then all the games that were coming out in 2013 or whatever, that was, I feel like, a shifting point where, you know, games for the last several years have just been becoming more and more mainstream over time. And if you think about 4 years ago, there may have been X number of people that were getting into school to learn about game design, and now they're out, or they've been out for 4 years in this period of time. So, like, the people that were training during those earlier developmental years are now out making their own games too. So, like, they're producing stuff like crazy, and, like, school programs, they make you make a game. So those things are coming out. So there's so many more avenues for people to develop a game now.
Yeah.
And it's really hard. I mean, unless you have, I mean, I feel like nowadays you really need to, I mean, there's also so many games that are being developed by one person, which is crazy to me that they're able to produce the level of quality that they do as a guy. Like the, what's a game that we played, with the Fox that's from Finji Studios at PAX, the Tunic. It's one guy making that game.
Yeah.
And it's gorgeous, and it's like incredible, and like that's insanely mind blowing to me. But
people taking on these absolutely just ludicrous amounts of work by themselves, to make one game, that looks at the caliber of a whole team making it,
right? Yeah, so it's a tough market.
I mean, back to you, your point about it being on Steam, which I totally agree with. If it was on other consoles, it would definitely see more success.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, I feel like with Steam, there's so many indie games on there that do get commercial success just being on Steam. And I really don't know what the ratio between console and PC players are, but I just feel like this is going to be one of those games like Picasso or whatever we look back on in like 10 years and like, oh, this is good. Like, do you guys play this game? It's like 10 years old, but it's so good. And spurs a revolution in gaming or something like that. But it's just, I don't know. It just doesn't, it kind of boggles my mind why it's not a success.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it really does. Like, everything, I mean, you read the article, they did a lot of things right. They have a lot of good things going for them. A lot of people recognize their game and said it was, you know, one way or another, sort of revolutionary in the way it's telling its story and how it's presenting it. But I'm just trying to think back on what do normal gamers want? Why are these other games more appealing? And yes, it does happen to be with the time. If we talked about it, the market is flooded with indie games. But at the same time, that hasn't changed some of these games being a success. At the same time,
right.
Other people have thrived on that, you know?
So I know what you're talking about. And I think a lot of the reasons for that is, I was talking to Devin about this before we started the podcast and everything, is that like this game is for a niche audience. Like, if you are under the age of 25, your understanding of American folklore of any kind unless you sat there and listened to your grandpa tell you about these stories of the Depression and stuff like that, it's foreign to you.
Very minimal.
We know
you probably
about,
learned a little bit in school about the Depression and what it meant.
We know a lot about World War II because all the games have made stuff about World War II for years and years and years. But this kind of this area of history hasn't really been touched on in any way. And so to most people, if you say this is an American folktale, they might not even know what that means. And like for me as a having an understanding of what this game is, I still don't know exactly how it plays. And I think gameplay is a big part of a game selling, especially in any game, because like What Remains of Edith Finch was so successful, I think, in the fact that not only did it have a good, interesting story, but it took the idea of the walking simulator and spin it on its head, and that it had really interesting gameplay mechanics to it. So that was something that people could talk about. So if they weren't interested in the story necessarily, they were intrigued by the gameplay elements that came through here. The fact that you could fly through the air and you could swim in the water and you could do all these different kind of gameplay mechanics.
Yeah.
So I think that's one of the things that may have hurt it. And the other thing is I kind of put this game in the realm of like a Telltale kind of game. And even though you move around and stuff like that, ultimately it's an adventure game telling a story. It's not a point and click adventure, but
yeah, I was going to say it's very much like a point and click adventure esque that I would really more put into more like a dialogue centric game.
Yeah. So the reason why, like if you look at Telltale's like library of games, they would never have been a success had it not been for licensed properties that they made their games about.
They were able to get them. They were able, Batman, Walking Dead,
all these things.
Borderlands, Fables, all these big hitting mediums that people know and love, and they're easily identifiable.
Yeah.
While Where the Water Tastes Like Wine,
nobody knows that story.
Like you're talking about an indie game on PC only for people who love American folklore. Man, we're getting into some niche audiences here,
but
which is a shame because I think a game like this is incredible. It needs to be played because it gives attention to an era of our American history,
right?
That's something it's so brilliant to make a game for that time period.
Yeah,
but just getting the attention to it.
So would you say that, okay, just comparing it to Hollow Knight, obviously it's not in the same gameplay mechanics or whatever, but are just having a game that you have to learn its history and background, is that, you think that's more appealing than this is something that you should know because it's American history? That suspension of disbelief is a little easier to jump into than taking like, oh, this is like real life. Like
maybe. I mean, I think that kind of harkens back to people's just personal preferences in playing video games.
Right.
Because, you know, there are some people who are going to look at things like Hollow Knight and go, oh, that's a very Souls-like game. It's difficult. It's hack and slash.
It's a fun game to play.
It's a fun game to play. Yeah. While there are people kind of like myself who do like those experiential, very story-driven, very almost investigatory style gameplay as far as the dialogue is concerned, which is kind of how he centered the mechanics of his game, is all those dialogue choices. I love that. But there are people who look at that and go, that's boring as shit. I don't want to do that.
Right.
I don't want to play that. I don't want to sit here and read a whole bunch of text boxes.
Yeah. And I'm in that boat. Like, I don't like reading a lot, but I think this game, I like games that tell me a story that I don't spend a lot of time on, mm-hmm. like, or that I don't have to put a lot of thinking into. Like, I just want to like learn and get educated from that. That's why I like the Telltale games when I play them, is because I can kind of sit there and just like pay attention to the story, but not have to be always, except for the last Guardians of the Galaxy, where they just like throw quick time events in you as you're doing like a 5 hour long cutscene. Piss me off. But, with this game, I think, I really feel that this could have, I think a lot of this is in the messaging of the game. Mm. Like this could have, because it's so hard to get games out there now, if you don't have a, like Celeste, I think got really popular because it was fucking hard. And people that like hard games talk about how hard it is to their friends, because I mean, in a way it's kind of like bragging rights, and another way it's just that, hey, this game is super hard, you should try it out because this is a game, I think, really struggle of a game.
You know, games like Celeste also got a lot of attention because of the subject matter.
So yeah, exactly.
That mental health.
Yeah. And that's a hot topic right now.
That's huge right now.
Yeah.
That is huge right now.
So, yeah, and like history, like nobody jumps on to like the history bandwagon, but I think
who wants to play a game about history? Yeah,
but I think where the water
let's learn about the Louisiana Purchase, huh?
I wonder if this game would have like done. So let's talk a little bit about things that could have been done better, or just ideas that may have like brought it more light. And this can be this can apply to everything. It's not just this game, but this is just kind of our baseline that we're working off of here. But I think like a comic book series or something that was released out on the web leading up to the release of this game could have maybe sparked some interest. Like, here's one of the stories released in a comic book form. It's very digestible. It's free. Check it out. For more, go play this game. Or, you know, a short animated web, like, you know how like Overwatch, when they announce their new characters and stuff, they sometimes do those animated shorts. Like, do an animated version of that, telling one of the stories, just a teaser of a story, and leading that into it. Like, maybe that could have, you know, sparked some interest and like attracted people from a different avenue. I don't know. That's kind of interesting to me.
For me, I know that he had a lot of troubles with the whole mouse and keyboard from the PC standpoint. Yeah. But just, man, if I could have played this on a console of some kind, I really feel like this could have.
I bet this could still see a lot of success if they can bring it to a console.
If
somehow.
He can't, like if they can manage to bring it to console, I think you could see
They are with Serenity Forge.
So yeah, that's what I was wondering. So I wonder if they're gonna be able to
decent backing
pull that
if they want to actually do that.
God, I hope so. I hope so. I really would.
It might.
I will literally buy it on all my consoles just so I can say that I've bought it three times, and I will preach it to the. I will preach it to the masses. Everyone, buy this game right the fuck now.
I agree. So,
and if you're watching this and you have a PC, go buy it.
Yeah. So this isn't the only game out there that's had situations like this.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of them out there that have run into issues related to this. Like, I mean, everybody we talked to at South by Southwest, like in some form or fashion, they were like, yeah, I'm not getting a lot of sales, not getting what we wanted. Like it's hard. It's mm-hmm. hard to reach an audience. And there's gotta be people like us out there, these, cause I mean, in a way we're, what do you call it?
Curators.
We are curators. Yeah. We're curators that are, no, there's another word. It is that on that it's a C word. I'm trying to think what it is. Cause you have the creators, you have the, like, I guess we're brand ambassadors in a way. I don't know. But yeah, curators is a good word.
Branding for bastards.
No, brand ambassadors.
Whoa.
Brand ambassadors.
I thought you said brand ambassadors. I was like, I don't know what that is. No, is that a new term?
Brand ambassadors.
A brand ambassador is somebody who is like a super fan, like a Star Wars fan who like loves something so much that
we provide a platform.
Yeah.
You know, we are the ones in the mix that we're talking with a lot of these devs, and we get to learn about not just the game, but we get to learn about them, and we champion out these games that we're like, man, people need to get their eyes on these. And I mean, I don't know if I helped the sales of Celeste at all. I hope I did.
Yeah.
But that's I want this game to succeed so bad.
Yeah, it's because it's funny. I feel like a lot of games we've been playing like have become successful, you know? And yeah, I think most of them early on were already successful, us going, but it's hard to see this now when they should be. Just like Aegis, we got to talk to them at South by Southwest, and they said they are making sales, but they aren't to the point. He put it, Bryce put it, the guy who created the game was like, we cannot make another game right now with the sales we have. And it's just like, what? If you don't know what Aegis Defender is, go. It's on Steam and it's on the Switch. Check it out. It is a platformer with what do you call it?
Tower defense elements.
Yeah. It's just sad to see this. And it's just, you know, like, you have a good game.
Yeah.
Great. Like, everything is right for it. And it feels like it would thrive in this environment.
Yeah.
Regardless of the market.
Yeah. and I know that this is just kind of the nature of the beast with indie games, just, well, and with AAA titles as well, not as bad with them, but with indie titles, there's just, and indie developers, there's just so much more riding on the line because it's their personal stake of a lot of their own money. They're a lot of their personal time, a lot of their personal time.
So the viewers, you guys don't really get to see this, but we get to talk to these guys.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh man,
you're delving into somebody's world who wants to have video games be their source of income, and because it's their life and we all play video games and we all enjoy them, and you're watching somebody pour blood, sweat and tears into making a game, and to not see the fruits of the of that labor is crushing. I can only imagine just how crushing that would be.
It's tough. So I think that's going to wrap up our discussion topic. We talked a lot about that.
Sad note. I'm so sad.
Yeah. So again, the moral of the story of this is, expand your palate. I feel like if you know a lot of our listeners, you know, I mean, not everybody has time to play all the games in the world.
No,
but like, you know, there's these big, like, for me as a gamer, the way I look at it is I could be playing a game like Far Cry 5 and all these games that require hundreds of hours of my time, or I can instead spend the same amount of money and buy four indie titles that take up 15 hours of that time.
Yeah.
And that's, you're reaching more people and helping more developers that need to get exposure and stuff like that. And I think that's something worth kind of looking into. So be conscious of like those things out there. If you see someone that's like, it's $10 and it's getting some good reviews, I mean, pick it up and give it a try, because you never know what you're going to run into. Like, I had no idea that I would love Night in the Woods as much as I did.
And
that game just absolutely blew my mind. And early in this podcast, you heard about Florence. Like, that game is fantastic. There's all these games, whether they're super small experiences or big experiences, that really are treasures.
And I feel like the last probably month and a half, I've done nothing but talk about
indie games
on the Switch.
They make more of an impact than, like, Far Cry 5 is fun, but it's not, I'm not going to remember it 10 years from now.
Especially when you're doing bonkers shit like going to the moon and blowing zombies up or whatever the fuck they're doing.
Exactly. So anyway, if you have a discussion topic that you want to hear us talk about, you can email us at hello@theinnergamer.net. Also, make sure you head over to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/theinnergamer, for all of our discussion topics, broken up into pieces, segments, all that stuff. So we definitely want you to check that out.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
Looking forward to next week. Let's talk about our upcoming video game releases. And it's a new month.
Oh.
And we're bringing back the free games.
For the low, low price.
The low, low price of free.
Of free.
Free. It's exciting.
If you buy the subscriptions.
If you buy the subscription plans, yes. So anyway, we only have one game coming out next week. Thank goodness, because we're backlogged to the wazoo. April 10th on PS4, Xbox One, and PC, we have Extinction. Extinction is a game in which you are one of the world's last sentinels, a soldier named Avil, whatever that is, equipped with the skills to battle the endless wave of Ravenai. Fight massive brutes and their minions across a sprawling countryside, defending cities and rescuing refugees torn from their homes.
You almost called him Advil, didn't you?
I almost did, yes.
So from this point forward, when Brett says names, we will cut him and have someone else who actually speaks be like,
Advil.
Advil.
If you would like to watch Raising Hope, please press 1.
Exactly.
If you would like to watch The Inner Gamer, please press 2. No one ever presses 2. You should try it.
You are extinct to me.
Oh, wow.
Does this game remind you of Shadow of the Colossus in any way? Just like the concept of, like,
except Colossi
to the, I'm curious. I don't know what the gameplay is going to be like with this, but it looks interesting. So I'm anxious to see what people say.
You gonna buy it on your backlog too?
No. I mean, I might buy it. We'll see. Anyway, so free games. PlayStation Plus, we have two games coming out. We have Mad Max and Trackmania Turbo. So if you guys never picked those games up back in the day, now they're free in April.
Oh, man. Finally get a chance to play some Mad Max.
Yes. And then in the Xbox, we have The Witness, Assassin's Creed Syndicate. Those are both Xbox One titles that are now going to be free in April. And then 360 and Xbox One cross-platform games. We have Disney's Pixar's Cars 2 and Dead Space 2 available for free in the month of April. So, with that said, that's going to wrap up our show this week. Be sure and check out our podcast next Tuesday for more from us, because we're awesome. Visit theinnergamer.net for our latest episodes, blogs, videos, and social channels. If you like what you hear, please leave a review on iTunes or tell a friend, please.
We also have a Patreon, which is where for you, our listeners, to donate to the cause in order to bring you all the great content you do want to see in here. Even a dollar a month will help bring you all this great content. With those contributions, we do have tiers. You can either do the monthly subscriptions, you can do the one-time donations, you can do all the great stuff that we would appreciate, because bringing this content is for you and we want to bring you more of it. So go to theinnergamer.net and click donate to contribute. And with that, my name is Devin Dree.
I'm Austin Morales.
I'm Ray Noski.
And you're listening to
The Inner Gamer.
I miss Luis.
Luis, we miss you.
We miss you, Luis.
We miss Luis. Three, two, and one. Hello and welcome to the
Inner
Gamer.
Wait, did we start?
Oh my God, you son of a bitch.
Wait, did we start? Oh, sorry. I guess that was that hello and welcome to the Inner Gamer. That trope that you've constantly said for the past 100.
It's got to be consistent.
63 episodes.
Four. About to be four.
Yeah, you get the first 10.
The past ones. This is a new one. So it's 163. Oh, yeah.
We did it,
what are you doing?
In the jungle, the mighty jungle.
God. Yeah.
Tonight.
Brett's in
big. Whatever we can do to ever keep Brett from singing again.
Dude, that's nothing.
I think that's like an important.